So this is the start of a book, Little M, March 1976, going through to September of the same year. Again, it will see a transition to more understandable methods and the sticky end method. So it begins with EQR1 tests with Sharon 3, one of Fred Blattner's safe viruses, bacteriophages, page 3, R1 tests of this, and the results of the digest, and the fragments obtained. Clearly, there were four obvious fractions. And the map is shown, and what is expected. And then EQR1 with Hindi 3 digests on the following page, and these are becoming much more familiar. Patterns, as far as I'm concerned, to the ones that became deeply ingrained in one's mind. EQR1 plus or minus ND3 plus or minus SE. Whatever SE is. And we have to pause, we will start again. This is the beginning of book Little M, with EQR1 and Hindi 3, plus or minus Hindi 3 digests, plus or minus sticky ends on chromosome 3, SE digests. And then going on to protocol. Obtained from some kind person on how to use terminal transferase to label the ends of DNA on page 6. Still sticky ends being considerably thought of. To begin to make some sense in terms of maps and DNA gels. The question of ligations and how, what concentration of buffer is needed. Or what concentration of fragments is needed to get the best ligation versus circularization of fragments. It was an equation which we had some enjoyment with called the Stockmeyer equation to calculate what is the optimum concentration of DNA so that end-to-end ligation will occur rather than circularization, etc. Fred Blattner had his son, he named a little program for the Stockmile equation after his son, whose name I don't remember, but may come up as we read through the book. But we had some enjoyment with a little computer program to calculate Stockmile concentrations. So here I am on page 11, having talking about an improved construction. Ligase tests, April 14th, with Sharon Page 3A, which was a very later was used a great deal, this particular Sharon Page. So talk about it, and now one digest of it on page no, that's not quite true. M15 control DNA was digested on page 15 and rerun on the following page. Quite reasonable job. I'm repeating the digest and the gels, respectable, on April 19th. Now then, the terminal transfer is talked about again, page 21. Use about 0.1 micrograms per microliter, and etc. And the rabbit's method of using a terminal transferase. So presumably that was the protocol that was given had been received from rabbits. There was still wasn't any handbook on how to do experiments with DNA yet available. April 20th, sticky ends again. Not very satisfactory. And the following page, careful scrutiny gives a map of Sharon 3. And suggesting that a long gel will resolve Hindi 3R1, etc., etc. And a gel testing. M13 control DNA, M15 R1 digest, and R1 and Hindi 3 digests. Clear evidence of ligation. Estimate about 80% ligation of this material. Terminal transferase, page 27, reverse transcriptase. First mention I've seen of that on Sharon 3A. And that the these pages are actually flagged by a label on the top of the attached to the page. And so the first one was terminal transferase on page 5, ligase of Sharon 3A on page 13, terminal transferase of Sharon 3A on page 37, reverse transcriptase of Sharon 3A 29, Sharon 3A lac hemoglobin transfection. Page 41, Sharon 3A lac ligase and terminal transferase on page 45, and Sharon 3A reverse transcriptase on page 49, with Sharon 3A terminal transferase number 2, page 51. So these pages are flagged as being important landmarks. We go back to progressive state. So now continuing again with the regular progression of pages, the page 27 is the terminal transferase reaction, 2,000 units of 84,400 units per mil. A label from C. Harvey's notes, it says, of the enzyme, but I don't have his notes. Terminal transferase from a donor. Reverse transcriptase, method considered and used on page 29. The experiments are beginning to try to label the DNA in these different ways. The result on page 33. Have M15R1 labeled and with a circle saying M31C DNA, complementary DNA. So this is beginning to make labeled probes with reverse transcriptase. Fairly decent electro autoradiograph and ethidium bromide stained gel. Terminal transferase number 2 experiment considered on page 35. Trying to get good labeled probes. Recheck on M31 cDNA, complementary DNA product on page 39. The conclusion, the proper sample of M13 complementary DNA is well represented in the ligased part. You can estimate from two ends on lac piece, etc., etc. So a protocol on page 40 from Tom Broker on renaturation kinetics. Beginning to understand the melting of DNA. So here on Thursday, April 29th, 11 plaques were recovered to Harvey Faber. A subsequent hybridization with 32P The CDNA shows 5 of out of 11 are tentatively globin positive. This is starting with M39 mix. What is M39 mix? M39, it was CDNA product. Not at all clear where the hemoglobin phages is coming from. But my memory is that it came from Tom Maniatis, but I haven't found any reference to that. So let's see if it makes sense on Friday, April 30th, page 43. Summary of procedures and comments for the next run. Ligation, share on 3A, KH803 DNA, R1 buffer, ligase, and R1 digestion, terminal transferase reaction. Terminal transferase and reverse transcriptase, but at this point nothing containing any reference to hemoglobin. Labeling again on page 45, Saturday, May 1st.
Jen, 1-6.
So on Tuesday, May 4th, by page 47, B, for some reason or other, instead of 48, gel test on terminal transferase products. The results are very clear. M45 DATP, terminal transferase is fine, so we can label. And it's cDNA, so this is learning to label bacteriophages in different ways. Harvey Faber is mentioned here on page 49. Harvey, before received DNTP from radiopharmacy. Poly-DT tails being added to Sharon 3A cDNA on page 53. Tests of annealing. DNA checks by the electron microscope being considered on page 59. I'm continuing to think about labeling with the DCTP and DCTP and DTTP. So with the results of electron microscopy sketched on the pages around about Monday, May 17, electron micrographs with various sketches of EM results, no images, but quite a lot of pieces, and 11.16 and 30.73, 29.5, 30.9, etc., etc. So it seemed to be able to look at the fragments reasonably well in the electron micrograph. Provisional conclusions on page 69. The ligation was query poor, or more likely nucleases eventually broke up and nicked the material. But this is a result of looking at the DNA in the electron micrograph. No ends and branches commented on page 68.
Oh, yeah, even on weekends too. Yeah, he's doing dictation to it now. This is also where we, if you're, you know, for hourly pay, you go over to one of those computers and check in from there. So,
okay.
Labeling here. Here is a mention of hemoglobin, again rather obscure. Page 75, M73 DNA and M63 DNA, etc., etc., but underlined at the bottom. Five blue plaques make sense. All should be globin positive, with two genes per piece due to trapping of large DNA in the precipitate. Again, nothing very clear what was going on. Thursday, June 17th, with a little note, happy birthday Nancy Exley, my sister's birthday, preparative electrophoresis for a lac piece, and a diagram of the gel in a column, in a tube, let's say. Trying to purify the material. Larger scale preparative electrophoresis, Saturday, June 19th. Recovery attempt. More Sharon 3A for lac on June 22nd. With a rather more interesting set of gels on page 90 versus 91, looking at Sharon a hemoglobin 9A is a clone, hemoglobin 3A is a clone. HB, at least this is HB, 9A, HB, 3A, contains duplication. Wonder if this HB really is hemoglobin, because it's talking about comments on M39 on page 91. Best bet is Sharon HB3A, next to Sharon HB9A. Nice gels on page 90, but what that all means is a little less clear. Page 93, Wednesday, June 23rd, my birthday, and of course of my twin. So happy birthday, RWS Roger William Smithers, my brother, which would have been. What year are we in, Jenny?
78.
Doesn't say. Oh, yes, it does. 76.
76.
So, 76. Been my 31st birthday. 76. No. Not my 31st. 76 would be my 51st birthday. So here I am at 51 on June 23rd. Lots of digests. Continuing with this saga. A new idea for extending the clones on June 28th, page 95. On page 97, after talking to Dave McCain and Fred Blattner, better to pre-purify CCC, etc. These are So continuing with the result from M75, although I don't understand them, that five of blue plaque were purified and regrown, etc. They should be single clone pieces with R1 sites. Two white were globin positive. These are quaternal regrowths. On page 101, I do understand. This is two strains obtained from Roy Curtis. Roy Curtis was developing his bacteria that were very debilitated as a result of mutations that he called the Chi, the Curtis or Chi bacterial strains, because people were still in the phase of not being sure that it was safe to clone human genes except under very restricted conditions, which is what Fred Blattner was dedicated towards doing. And so he telephoned Roy Curtis asking for a bacterial strain that was weaker than normal to increase the safety level achievable with his bacteriophages. So Sharon phages were going to be grown on a defective E. coli strain to increase the safety factor. And he tried to get hold of Roy Curtis and didn't succeed, and instead talked to Dennis Pereira, who was Roy Curtis's postdoc at the time, or graduate student, I don't know which. But Dennis Pereira sent his strain, which was called DP50 sub F, as I recollect. Anyway, it was a defective bacterial strain that required diaminopimelic acid to grow, and carried a suppressor gene, suppressor F, which would allow the bacteriophages, Fred's bacteriophages, to grow. For Fred's bacteriophages had various chain termination mutants in various places, and needed a suppressor of suppressor tRNA in order to grow. And DP50 sub F, or DP40F, we'll see the name in a little while, was obtained from Dennis Pereira. There was some controversy about that, which I think I've mentioned earlier. But if not, we'll talk about it at a later stage, because Roy later on thought that this was inappropriate to have gotten it from Dennis Ferreira without talking to him, which is probably correct. But anyway, two DAP minus, thymidine minus strains from Roy Curtis to test for Sharon growth and for transfection on page 101. Yes, it is DP50, because all Sharons grow well on B50, which became later called DP50, because it was Dennis Ferreira strain 50 and had sub F in it. Is the result of the beginning of the test that was finally done, because it was needed to show that the passage through the human intestine would result in very serious decrease in these bacteria now. So bacteria, as I remember, the cover of Science there has a picture of Fred's Sharon Phages, and the bottom of the cover has a comment that 10 to the 9th bacteria, and I'll get the exact quote. Yes, in the eventual publication of the Sharon Phages Safer Derivatives of Bacteriophage Lambda for DNA Cloning, which was published in April 8th of 1977, and made the cover of Science. Fred Blattner is the first author, and Bill Williams is second author. I'm at the end. The sentence is that to test the fecal, the passage through the intestine, 9.4 times 10 to the 8th of the strain, 1100.5, was fed in 250 mils of milk to three humans. And the three humans were, in fact, Fred Blattner, Bill Williams, and myself, and we all survived the test. But here on page 103 is the beginning of setting up that test, because it's talk about all the Sharon Phages grow well on B50, which in a couple of pages becomes called DP. 50 sub F, and here comment 3 is, well, let's start at the top. All Sharons grow well on B50, comment 1, comment 2, tested transfection, and the result was okay, and a rough test of the fecal pellet handling, how to homogenize fecal pellets was talked about. Plates were made, etc., etc. And Ed Sheldon, presumably Ed Sheldon, let's just see. Yes, it was indeed Edward Sheldon. Ed Sheldon set up fecal pellets, plus etc., plus in future to be called with B50, in future to be called DP50. That name was approved by Roy Curtis. And some testing of sensitivity UV of DP50 and 107, etc., continuing to investigate some of its properties. On page 1111, chloroform on DP50. Difficulty in lysing with chloroform because of the sensitivity of the bacteriophage. With the result that unequivocally chloroform for 10 minutes with 2 shakes does not reduce the titer appreciably. A DP50 could stand chloroform. Further killing tests, Sharon 3A and DP50 on page 115, and a little bit more precise statement on 114, chloroform decreases the titer to about 80%. Chloroform and octyl alcohol, I presume, increases the titer to about 500%, and trichloro methanol decreases it to 10%, etc., and diethyl pyrocarbonate, DEPC, decreased it to about 10^-3%. So we are killing tests on DP50. DNA transcription protocol, September 2nd, 1973, written down. KH502 standard was 2.9 × 10^-6. DP50 with lysozyme, that's the same as the standard, is 2.9 × 10^-7. And without lysozyme, 1 × 10^-6, etc. And with the note that when lysozyme is added to DP50, there's trouble with the resuspension. So lysozyme and DP50 suffer for a little bit incompatible. We can detect a chromosome 3 lysogen on page 121 by release of the phage, the plaque colour and the colour of the colony. I'm forgetting that there is a lac Z in these phages, and that's where the colour of the colony is coming from. I'd forgotten that there was lac Z, and we could therefore use plates with the indicator for activity of lac, and get colour indicating that the material there had that could express that gene. So that would be explaining the what shouldn't have been a mystery, the colour of the phages that had puzzled me, colour of the colonies. This is an indication of whether they had and were expressing the lac Z gene. Test on page 123, conclusion, DP50 is not sensitive to 0.05% deoxycholate. New enrichment schemes on page 125. A digression of going back to separation of chromatin containing bromine deoxyuridine in one or both strands of cDNA, which was Lauren Teichman and Liz Friedlander's paper in 1976, and then I'm helping Liz evidently with making nuclei with notes on what the protocol should be. And page 128 and page 129, talking about repairing EQR1 sites from a cutout of a fragment made with EQR1, and then a ligase to ligate it to an EQR1 fragment with some other way of getting rid of the need to use terminal transferase. and continuing with that general idea in the following pages. Back to nuclei, DNA and nuclei from S563 embryonic cells on page 135. Two recipes for making DNA from these cells. Susie's recipe, page 138, and Lorne's recipe. Susie's is Levan and Lorne's is Teichmann. M139 DNA. Learning to use a diethyl pyrocarbonate and clean things up with a phenol and 8-hydroxyquinoline on page 139. Provisional conclusions on the following page. And the use of pronase. Talking now about digestive of human DNA. Page 143, September 22nd. Human DNA can be loaded after R1, etc., at 50 micrograms per slot. And some examples of R21, digested material and the long smear of DNA typical from human DNA. From M139 DNA. That's M139 is the page of making it, and it is a material isolated from the cultured embryonic stem cells. Which it was necessary to label page 143 of the gel shows that it was necessary after digestion to have rather a heavy label, a large amount of DNA in order to see the digested product. So the 4X Hellings gel, 0.75% agarose gel shows the control is just showing what the total DNA looks like, which migrates only minimally into the gel. And after digestion, the only one that you can see reasonably easily is the one that's a high concentration. The others after digestion are too spread out to sea. But the beginning of a good electrophoresis of mammalian DNA digested with EQA1. So on page 145 it goes on with this idea of decided to R1 the whole of the remainder but under more concentrated conditions so that we could do in situ hybridization using either a complementary DNA or a clone probe. So the beginning of being able to hybridize to an EQA1 digest. Page 147, M147, preparation of DNA, R1, he digested DNA and gave this to Ed to try for histone genes, because he could try for histone genes, whereas we were wanting to find hemoglobin containing genes. Page 148, the Blattner hybridization technique. It was in situ gel hybridization. He almost invented what became the southern blot method, doing it in gels without transfer. The problem was that Fred's method, the material diffused rather slowly. However, he did manage to make it work, I don't think it ever, whether it was published or not, I'm not sure. Ed Sutton's method was a better method of finding colonies in a digest. But here is his technique described on page 148 for in situ gel hybridization. Run an agarose gel, stain it in ethidium bromide, photograph it, and then in place hybrid in placo hybridization. Etc. And in 1 mole of potassium hydroxide for 30 to 60 minutes to melt the DNA, and so on and so forth. And the hybridization labeled RNA or DNA over several hundred nucleotides and must be partially broken down, broken up to keep the background down. But most easily accomplished by sonication, but it was a good attempt. I think I'm an author on a paper describing that, which also includes the Helling four times buffer, and we'll look that up in a moment. There's a recipe for Nick translation, which later became a common method of labeling DNA to make a probe. DNA polymerase 1, etc., etc. Using alpha 32 phosphate labeled DNTPs of each or of one and called others DNTPs, so one could label with one or all of the bases. And in situ hybridization is talked about on page 151, and Nick translation is there, and then uh, M130-150 (32P) HP3 must have been material labelled from a cDNA clone. I think we had a cDNA clone from a rabbit hemoglobin, if I remember, but we'll have to check that later. So that's the end of this book.